All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Doug Thornton. You are listening to American Vindicta. We are on episode 23, and today we are going to wrap up a long, exhaustive week of talking about the EMP threat to America, which is the electromagnetic pulse. During this time, we've covered quite a few different things. I haven't really heard anyone else get as exhaustive into this as I have so far. But I strongly encourage those of you who know much more than me and are subject matter experts in these fields, please give us your information. Teach us what you know so that we may all be better prepared, so that we may all survive a potential EMP threat in this country or any type of grid down scenario. We're going to be talking about plagues. Yesterday we covered what your neighbor may be. And that was not really a parody. It was more of a forewarning of what people will do during extreme times of duress. And we already have plenty of people out there who are evil. We already have plenty of criminals out there and would-be gang members who would, you know, take advantage of a system that is no longer there to prevent their crime. So yesterday was an overview of the type of people that we've had in this country who have done horrific crimes before an apocalyptic event. Just imagine how much worse it could get when there's no more rules. So today, we're going to continue down this same type of genre. We're going to talk about the different types of plagues that have happened around the world. My top 20 worst epidemic and pandemics of the history. And I have some resources to cite, so you can go visit these sites and read for them yourself. And then we're also going to talk about the top 9 or 10 that hit the United States. And we'll discuss a little bit about preparation for these things. And the reason for this is whenever the lights go off, whenever we don't have an infrastructure to support our normal way of life or functions, we will get caught up with doing mundane tasks and not think about the scratch, not think about the jab wound or, the glass that you stepped on, and treating that wound properly. Over time, without proper hygienic responsibilities, the body gets pretty nasty. And I've been in places around the world where you weren't able to, shower consistently, especially in Iraq, and you know, you can get to smelling pretty rank, and people will, you know, they'll start to have all types of different infections that are happening because you're moving constantly. You're in dirty clothes a lot. Your boots are consistently sweaty, and so are your clothes if you're not changing out of them enough, or if you don't have the proper way to wash your clothes to help prevent some of these types of infectious diseases or other different types of pandemics that could be, you know, caught upon your clothing from other people or even animals. So we're going to talk about some of this, and I don't mean to bore you, but I'm going to let the experts tell you what their fears are, because I can point out to you some things here and there, but I'm not a doctor, but I have played one on TV. So without further ado, I would like to start this off with Matthew 10. Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and every sickness. Amen. While applying medical aid or rendering medical aid to somebody, or you are applying a preventative measures, you know, like chlorine tablets in water, boiling your water, making sure that your food is thoroughly cooked through to help prevent any type of worms that may be in the animal's meat that you may digest, or salmonella outbreaks. I would tell you that during these times when you're applying this medical aid and this prevention to include all these different types of safety measures with your food, with your water, with your living conditions, keeping a clean, healthy home and healthy body, a clean body as much as possible, I encourage you to not leave out the healing power of Christ. Be applying the blood of Christ upon yourself and upon those whom you help, upon the aid that you render, or every safety precaution that you are taking. It doesn't hurt just to stop, say a little prayer, and to bless your home, to cover your home or your goods under the blood of Jesus. I implore you, please use the preventative powers and measures of Christ, who can heal and cure all things. Apply that during the apocalypse. Do not forget that you are not alone. Christ is with us. And if God is with us, then who can stand against us? So we're going to roll right into this. I'm a little bit of a history buff, so I love going back in time. We know that history loves to repeat itself, and history can be quite sad and quite violent. And I think it's good that occasionally we take a look back in history and we think about the way that the world used to be before, you know, the modern age, before we had all this great, you know, infrastructure and technology and the advancements in epidemiology. You know, because of epidemiology, we don't have quite the risk to many of these deadly diseases and viruses. So when the lights go out, are we still going to have that? Are you still going to be able to go out to the doctor's office? Are you still going to be able to get the medicine? Are you still going to be able to find the antibacterial creams? Are you still going to be able to, you know, find rubbing alcohol or peroxide or iodine to use? You know, if you don't have that, I strongly suggest that you also start stocking up on essential oils. Me and my wife use essential oils for quite a bit of few things, especially for the health of our animals. But myrrh is a big one. I highly advise you use myrrh for any type of very egregious wound. Myrrh is a very good preventative solution to put on any type of tear in the skin, any type of, you know, infection that's happening, a boil or, you know, anything that's nasty that you need to put a big Band-Aid on and you're really worried about it, put myrrh on it. They have used it for thousands and thousands of years. The Spartans, from Lacedaemonia, way back in time. I'm sure some of you know who the Spartans were. They coveted myrrh very much, and they would take oak leaves or various types of large leaves, and they would put beeswax and myrrh together and form a little solution. And they would keep that inside these green leaves, and they would wrap it up, and they would put it on their pouches, which would be basically a rucksack or a backpack that the Spartans would carry themselves. And also their helots, which is their serf class, would also carry these medical aids. They carried all types of bindings and dog bites, which are little brass pincers that would help stop an artery from bleeding if there was a really large laceration. And myrrh was something that was applied to almost every single wound. There's already good, healthy, preventative stuff that's inside beeswax. But myrrh added to that, it's a miracle that we don't... it's a miracle when it is applied, and it is strange that the medical community no longer applies it. And, we have things like triple antibiotic ointments. All that stuff is very good, but... Honestly, I fall back on myrrh and beeswax a lot. It's worked for a lot of scrapes and ouchies and bobos that I've had for my kids or myself. And it's pretty simple to keep, and the stuff goes a long, long way. So keep that inside your preparatory places. So let's get into this. 20 of the worst epidemics and pandemics in history. And I'm sourcing this from livescience.com. Let's see. Starting with the prehistoric epidemic circa 3000 BC. About 5,000 years ago, an epidemic wiped out a prehistoric village in China. The bodies of the dead were piled in a house that was later burned down. No age group was spared, as the skeletons of juveniles, young adults, and middle-aged people were found inside the house. The archaeological site is now called Hamon Magna, and is one of the best-preserved prehistoric sites in northeastern China. Archaeological and anthropological study indicates that the epidemic happened quickly enough that there was no time for proper burials, and the site was not inhabited again. Before the discovery of Hamon Magna, another prehistoric mass burial that dates to roughly the same time period was found at a site called, I'm going to butcher this, it starts with an M, in northeastern China. Together, these discoveries suggest that an epidemic ravaged the entire region. So, 5,000 years ago, they had different types of, let's say, medical ailments for people. And, different things that they would say, that's the black spot, that's the cough, that's the sweating that they would recognize. And what people back then would do is they would quarantine people off in other areas. And, the chances of survival back then, because the living standards weren't very well, purifying the water or cooking the food properly, to go along with any other type of ailment from environmental hazards. Back then, whenever you got any type of severe illness, your days were numbered. Very few survived. Even if then, the average adult died in their 30s and 40s. Now the average adult dies in their 70s, 80s, or sometimes beyond that. So we have advanced ourselves tremendously through epidemiology and through proper hygiene. People don't understand that proper hygiene is really one of the best preventative maintenance things that you can do to prepare yourself for any type of outbreak and to also stop any type of outbreak. So let's roll down to number two. Plague of Athens, 430 BC. Around 430 BC, not long after a war between Athens and Sparta, began an epidemic ravaged the people of Athens and lasted for 5 years. Some estimates put the death toll as high as 100,000 people. The Greek historian Theodiades, who was between 460 and 400 BC, wrote that people in good health were all of a sudden attacked by violent heats in the head and redness and inflammation in the eyes, the inward parts, such as the throat and tongue, becoming bloody and emitting an unnatural fetid breath. What exactly this epidemic was has long been a source of debate among scientists. A number of diseases have been put forward as possibilities, including typhoid fever and Ebola. Many scholars believe that overcrowding caused by the war exasperated the epidemic. Sparta's army was stronger, forcing the Athenians to take refuge behind a series of fortifications called the Long Walls that protected their city. Despite the epidemic, the war continued on, not ending until 404 BC, when Athens was forced to capitulate to Sparta. We are going to stop right there. We're going to go to our first break, and then we'll get right back on it.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
And we're back. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We're talking about the top 20 outbreaks that ravaged the world before the apocalypse and may come back during the apocalypse. So going back to number 3, the Antonin Plague, AD 165 to 180. When soldiers returned to the Roman Empire from campaigning, they brought back more than just the spoils of victory. The Antonin Plague, which is may have been smallpox, laid waste to the army and may have killed over 5 million people in the Roman Empire, wrote April Putzi, a senior lecturer in Roman history at the Manchester Metropolitan University. Many historians believe that the epidemic was first brought into the Roman Empire by soldiers returning home after a war against Parthia. The epidemic contributed to the end of the Pax Romana, or the Roman Peace, and a period 27 BC to AD 180, when Rome was at the height of its power. After AD 180, instability grew throughout the Empire of Rome, as it experienced more civil wars and invasions by barbarian groups. Christianity became increasingly popular in the time after the plague occurred. I want to stop right there. Listen to this. Instability grew throughout the Roman Empire as it experienced more civil wars and invasions by barbarian groups, while a horrific plague was ravaging the empire. How many more times must people like me repeat that we are going to be going through a civil war, we are going to eventually be invaded because of politics, and at that same time, we are going to still experience plagues as we see now with COVID SARS. This can still be a continuation into our nearest history. Prepare for it. The Plague of Cyprian, AD 250 to 271. Named after Saint Cyprian, a bishop of Carthage, which is a city in Tunisia, who described the epidemic as signaling the end of the world. The plague of Cyprian is estimated to have killed 5,000 people a day in Rome alone. In 2014, archaeologists in Luxor found what appears to be a mass burial site of plague victims. Their bodies were covered with a thick layer of lime, historically used as a disinfectant. Archaeologists found three kilns used to manufacture lime and the remains of plague victims burned in a giant bonfire. Experts aren't sure what disease caused this epidemic. The bowels relaxed into a constant flux, discharged the bodily strength, and a fire originated in the marrow ferments into wounds of the area of the mouth. That's what St. Cyprian had wrote down. So, you know, we can see once again that there is a, I guess you could say, there is a constant need for having proper hygienic care, being able to quarantine off the sick, and that mass die-offs, even in at that point in time, the most powerful, most technologically advanced empire in the world still ravaged the nation, and there wasn't much they could do about it. During times like this, separating yourself from severely sick people, and as bad as that may be, and proper preventative maintenance on yourself, on your home, for your cattle, your livestock, your water, that will save lives. You know, chlorine tabs, they're very simple to use, very easy and cheap. That's probably one of the better things to have, and I would double to triple purify my water. Now, you can easily take the water out of the pond or the lake or the stream or whatever you have it, if you had to collect it, purify it through some sort of a water purification system. I would do it twice if need be, and then I would boil the water, and then I would put my chlorine tabs in the water because, you know, dying from throwing up to death is not cool. Plague of Justinian, AD 541 to 542. The Byzantine Empire was ravaged by a bubonic plague, which marked the start of its decline. The empire was marked by the start of the decline because of a plague. The plague reoccurred periodically afterward. Some estimates suggest that up to 10% of the world's population died. The plague is named after the Byzantine Empire, or Emperor Justinian, who reigned during AD 527 to 565. Under his reign, the Byzantine Empire reached its greatest extent, controlling territory that stretched from the Middle East to Western Europe. Once again, one of the greatest empires during that time was ravaged by a plague, and then the empire crumbled. See the pattern yet? Number 6, the Black Plague, 1346 to 1353. The Black Death traveled from Asia to Europe, leaving devastation in its wake. Some estimates suggest that it wiped out over half of Europe's population. It was caused by a strain of the bacterium Yersinia pestis that is likely extinct today and was spread by fleas on infected rodents. The bodies of victims were buried in mass graves. The plague changed the course of Europe's history. With so many dead, labor became harder to find, bringing about better pay for workers and the end of Europe's system of serfdom. Studies suggest that surviving workers had better access to meat and higher quality bread. The lack of cheap labor may have also contributed to technological innovations. Once again, are you noticing the pattern here? All right, number 7. I'm gonna destroy this name. Coco Lizetelli epidemic, 1545 to 1548. If you can pronounce, this, you're a better person than I. The infection that caused this epidemic was a form of viral hemorrhagic fever that killed 15 million inhabitants of Mexico and Central America. Among a population already weakened by extreme drought, and the disease proved to be utterly catastrophic. It is this coccolistli is the Aztec word for pest. A recent study that examined DNA from the skeletons of victims found that they were infected by a subspecies of Salmonella, which can cause an enteric fever, which is a category of fever that includes typhoid. Enteric fever can cause high fever, dehydration, and gastrointestinal problems, and is still a major health threat today. Number 8, American Plague, 16th century. The American plagues were a cluster of Eurasian diseases brought to the Americas by European explorers. These illnesses included smallpox, contributed to the collapse of the Inca and Aztec civilizations. Some estimates suggest that 90% of the indigenous population in the Western Hemisphere was killed off from it. The disease helped a Spanish force led by Hernan Cortes to conquer the Aztec capital in 1519. Another Spanish force led by Francisco Pizarro conquered the Incas in 1532. The Spanish took over the territories of both empires. In both cases, the Aztec and Incan armies had been ravaged by disease and were unable to withstand the Spanish forces. When people from Britain, France, Portugal, and the Netherlands began exploring, conquering, and settling the Western Hemisphere, they were helped by the fact that disease had vastly reduced the size of any indigenous groups that opposed them. So, take into what I've been saying for the week. Let's just say, in the near post-apocalyptic future of America, as we are ravaged by disease, we don't have a proper power grid that is running efficiently anymore or running at all. We have civil wars amongst the country. We don't have the ability to have proper hygienic faculties with us anymore. And, you know, food poisoning, water poisoning, infectious diseases running rampant. It truly weakens not just the resolve of the people, but the people's will to even withstand the common cold, which kills off a great number of people. So if you were truly an enemy state like China or Russia, wouldn't you, instead of having to invade the United States, wouldn't you just ravage the United States with plagues until we were so weak that we almost welcomed your invasion? You know, if they came over here with medicine and fresh water, fresh food, the ability to turn the power back on, people would walk into the arms of the communist. Number 9, Great Plague of London, 1665 to 1666. The Black Death's last major outbreak in Great Britain caused a mass exodus from London, led by King Charles II. The plague started in April 1665 and spread rapidly through the hot summer months. Fleas from plague-infected rodents were one of the main causes of transmission. By the time the plague had ended, about 100,000 people, including 15% of the population of London, had died. However, this was not the end of that city's suffering. On September 2nd, the Great Fire of London started, lasting for 4 days and burning down a large portion of the city. Number 10, the Great Plague of Marseille, 1720 to 1723. Historical records say that the Great Plague of Marseille, started when a ship called Grand Saint Anton docked in Marseille, France, carrying a cargo of goods from the Eastern Mediterranean. Although the ship was quarantined, plague still got into the city, likely through fleas on plague-infected rodents. Plague spread out quickly. Over the next 3 years, as many as 100,000 people may have died in Marseille, surrounding and the surrounding areas. It's estimated that up to 30% of the population of Marseille may have actually perished. So here's a good train of thought here. When we live in this post-apocalyptic time, and you are trading with goods back and forth with people, it does not hurt to quarantine the mass amount of goods that are you're getting from another group of people off to the side in a place that is direct sunlight. And if you have the ability to put them in an area where you have high UV light hitting it, you can somehow disinfect it through some sort of a homeopathic need. I would strongly recommend it based off of stuff like this, especially when you're trading cows and pigs and goats and chickens. Something that we do on our farm whenever we purchase poultry from another seller, what we'll do is we actually have a quarantine chicken coop that we then put the poultry into there, and under observation for 2 weeks, we monitor them. We give them various different types of medications to, during the point of travel, birds, they can get very sick very quickly. And so, just to help the immune system and to fight off whatever bugs they may have, we give them Corid, and we give them a couple other different things to help with, purifying the bird, I guess you could say. So still in current practice, we are still doing that. All right. Number 11, the Russian plague, 1770-1772. I got to start blazing through this. A plague ravaged Moscow. The terror of quarantined citizens erupted into violence. Riots spread through the city and culminated in the murder of Archbishop Ambrosius, who was encouraging crowds not to gather for worship. Doesn't that sound familiar? Wow. The Empress of Russia, Catherine II, also called Catherine the Great, was so desperate to contain the plague and restore public order that she issued a hasty decree ordering that all factories be moved from Moscow. By the time the plague ended, as many as 100,000 people may have died. Even after the plague ended, Catherine struggled to restore order. In 1773, a man who claimed to be Peter III, Catherine's executed husband, led an insurrection that resulted in the deaths of thousands more. Number 12, Philadelphia Yellow Fever Epidemic, 1793. When yellow fever seized Philadelphia, the United States Capitol at the time, officials wrongly believed that slaves were immune. As a result, abolitionists called for people of African origin to be recruited to nurse the sick. The disease is carried and transmitted by mosquitoes, which experienced a population boom during the particularly hot and humid summer weather in Philadelphia that year. It wasn't until winter arrived and the mosquitoes died out that the epidemic finally stopped. By then, more than 5,000 people had died. So, wrong science, unknown origins of the disease, and not knowing exactly how to stop or prevent the disease really just made the disease flower and bloom throughout the city. One of the reasons why it's so good every year to have the winter and the cold snaps and the hard freezes is that it kills off many parasites and parasitical insects and organisms throughout the United States. And when we have warm or to even hot winters, the summer ends up becoming much worse for infectious diseases. So, post-apocalyptic, if you end up having a rather warm winter, be wary, because come spring and summer, you're going to have all different types of medical problems you're going to have to deal with. Number 13, the flu pandemic, 1889 to 1890. In the modern industrial age, new transport links made it easier for influenza virus to wreak havoc. In just a few weeks, the disease spanned the globe, killing 1 million people. It took just 5 weeks for the epidemic to reach peak mortality. The earliest cases reported in Russia. The virus spread rapidly throughout St. Petersburg before it quickly made its way throughout Europe and the rest of the world, despite the fact that air travel didn't exist yet. Number 14, American polio epidemic of 1916. A polio epidemic that started in New York City caused 27,000 cases and 6,000 deaths in the United States. The disease mainly affects children and sometimes leaves survivors with permanent disabilities. Polio epidemics occurred sporadically in the United States until the Salk vaccine was developed in 1954. As the vaccine became widely available, cases in the United States started to decline. The last polio case in the United States was reported in 1979. Worldwide vaccination efforts have greatly reduced the disease, although it is not completely eradicated. So, remember that. Polio is still not completely eradicated. Number 15, Spanish Flu, 1918 to 1920. An estimated 500 million people from the South Seas to the North Pole fell victim to the Spanish flu. One-fifth of those died, with some indigenous communities pushed to the brink of extinction. The flu spread and lethality was enhanced by the cramped conditions of soldiers and poor wartime nutrition that many people were experiencing during World War I. Once again, being very close to people and poor nutrition. That ended up being one of the main antagonists here. Despite the name Spanish flu, the disease likely did not start in Spain. Spain was a neutral nation during the war and did not enforce strict censorship of its press, which could therefore freely publish early accounts of the illness. As a result, people falsely believed that the illness was specific to Spain and the name Spanish flu stuck. Number 16, Asian Flu, 1957 to 1958. The Asian flu pandemic was another global showing for influenza. With its roots in China, the disease claimed more than 1 million lives. The virus that caused the pandemic was believed of avian flu viruses. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention noticed that the disease spread rapidly and was reported in Singapore in February 1957, Hong Kong in April 1957, and the coastal cities of the United States in the summer of 1957. The total death toll was more than 1.1 million worldwide, with 116,000 deaths occurring in the United States. Number 18. The H1N1 swine flu pandemic, 2009 to 2010. The 2009 swine flu pandemic was caused by a new strain of H1N1 that originated in Mexico in the spring of 2009 before spreading to the rest of the world. In 1 year, the virus infected as many as 1.4 billion people across the globe and killed 151,700,000 and 575,000 people. And that was according to the CDC. In 2009, the flu pandemic primarily affected children and young adults, and 80% of the deaths were in people younger than 65. That was unusual considering that most strains of flu viruses, including those that cause seasonal flu, cause the highest percentage of deaths in people of the ages of 65 and older. But in the case of the swine flu, older people seem to have already built up enough immunity to the groups of viruses that H1N1 belongs to, so they weren't affected as much. A vaccine for H1N1 virus that caused the swine flu is now included in the annual flu vaccine. A vaccine for the H1N1 virus that caused this swine flu. Y'all are going to start seeing a pattern here. Number 19, Western African Ebola epidemic, 2014 to 2016. Ebola ravaged West Africa between 2014 and 2016 with 28,000 reported cases and 11,325 deaths. The first case to be reported was in Guinea in December 2013, then the disease quickly spread to Liberia and Sierra Leone. The bulk of the cases and deaths occurred in those three countries. A smaller number of cases occurred in Nigeria, Mali, Senegal, the United States, and Europe, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported. There is no cure for Ebola, although efforts at finding a vaccine are ongoing. The first known cases of Ebola occurred in Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo in 1976, and the virus may have originated from bats. Number 20, the Zika virus epidemic of 2015, present day. We're going to go to a short break, and then we're going to come right back and discuss the Zika virus.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com, for the best prepping outfit in the country. Or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Okay, and we're back. This is American Vindicta. Thank you for listening. So we've been discussing quite a bit about infectious diseases, pandemics, and epidemics around the world. And we are on number 20, which was the Zika virus. The impact of the recent Zika epidemic in South America and Central America won't be known for several years. In the meantime, scientists face a race against time to bring the virus under control. The Zika virus is usually spread through mosquitoes, although it can also be sexually transmitted in humans. While Zika is usually not harmful to adults or children, it can attack infants who are still in the womb and cause birth defects. So that was the top 20 from livescience.com. Real quick, over at healthline.com, I want to talk to you about the worst outbreaks in U.S. history. In 1633 to 1634, we had the smallpox from European settlers. In 1721, more than 6,000 cases were reported out of Boston, which was a population of only 11,000. Around 850 people died from the disease. In 1793, yellow fever from the Caribbean hit refugees fleeing from the Caribbean islands who sailed into Philadelphia carrying the virus with them. Yellow fever causes yellowing of the skin, fever, and bloody vomiting. During 1793 outbreak, it's estimated that 10% of the city's population died and many others fled to avoid it. In 1832 to 1866, cholera hit in three waves. The United States had three serious waves of cholera, an infection of the intestines, between 1832 and 1866. The pandemic began in India and swiftly spread across the globe through trade routes. New York City was the first U.S. city to feel the impact. Between 5 and 10% of the total population died in large cities. It's unclear what ended the pandemic, but it may have been the change in climate or the use of quarantine measures. By the early 1900s, outbreaks had ended. Immediate treatment is crucial because cholera can cause death very quickly. Treatment includes antibiotics, zinc supplementation, and rehydration. Cholera still causes nearly 95,000 deaths a year worldwide, and that's according to the CDC. Modern sewage and water treatment have helped eradicate cholera in some countries, but the virus is still present elsewhere. In 1858, scarlet fever hit America. Scarlet fever is a bacterial infection that can occur after strep throat. Like cholera, scarlet fever epidemics came in waves. Scarlet fever most commonly affects children ages 5 to 15. It's rare in children under 3. Adults who are in contact with sick children have an increased risk of catching it as well. Older studies argue that scarlet fever declined due to improved nutrition, but research shows that the improvements in public health were the more likely cause. 1906 and 1907, Typhoid Mary. One of the biggest typhoid fever epidemics of all time broke out in 1906 and 1907 in New York. Mary Mallon, often referred to as Typhoid Mary, spread the bacterial infection to about 122 New Yorkers during her time as a cook on an estate in a hospital unit. About 5 of the 122 New Yorkers who contacted the illnesses from Typhoid Mary died. A total of 13,160 deaths in 1906 and 12,670 deaths in 1907. Medical testing showed that Mary was a healthy carrier for typhoid fever. Typhoid fever can cause sickness and red spots to form on the chest and the abdomen. 1918, the H1N1 flu. H1N1 is a strain of flu that still circulates the globe annually. In 1918, the flu was behind the influenza pandemic, sometimes also called the Spanish flu that we just recently went over. After World War I, the cases of the flu slowly declined. None of the suggestions providing at the time, wearing masks or drinking coal oil, were effective cures. Today's treatments include bed rest, fluids, and antiviral medications. Influenza strains mutate every year, making last year's vaccinations less effective. So just consider that with all this vaccine stuff that we keep talking about. Every vaccine that we get, we have another mutation, which makes, you know, these vaccines less effective, but yet they'll still, you know, destroy the country over it. In 1921 to 1925, the diphtheria epidemic. Diphtheria peaked in 1921 with 206,000 cases. It causes swelling of the mucous membranes, including in your throat, that can obstruct breathing and swallowing. Sometimes a bacterial toxin can enter the bloodstream and cause fatal heart and nerve damage. By the 1920s, researchers licensed a vaccine against the bacterial disease. Infection rates plummeted in the United States. In 1916 to 1955, the peak of polio. Polio is a viral disease that affects the nervous system, causing paralysis. It spreads through direct contact with people who have the infection. Outbreaks occurred regularly in the United States through the 1950s, with two major polio outbreaks in 1916 and 1952. Of the 57,628 reported cases in 1952, there were an estimate 3,145 deaths. In 1957, the H2N2 flu. A major flu outbreak occurred again in 1957. The H2N2 virus, which originated in birds, was first reported in Singapore in February 1957 and Hong Kong 1957. It appeared in coastal cities in the United States in 1957. The estimated number of deaths was 1.1 million worldwide and 116,000 in the United States. The pandemic was actually considered to be mild because it was caught early. Scientists were able to develop a vaccine based on the knowledge from creating the first flu vaccine in 1942. H2N2 no longer circulates in humans, but it still affects birds and pigs. It's possible that the virus may again jump from animals to humans in the future. In 1981 to 1991, we had a series of measles outbreaks, which was really bad. But since then, each year has typically had fewer than 1,000 cases, though this was surpassed in 2019. Measles is a virus that causes fever, runny nose, cough, red eyes, and sore throat, and later a rash that spreads all over the body. And it primarily occurs in children, and it spreads through the air, and is very contagious. In 1993, contaminated water in Milwaukee. One of Milwaukee's two water treatment plants became contaminated with Cryptosporidium, a parasite that causes Cryptosporidiosis infection. Symptoms include dehydration, fever, stomach cramps, and diarrhea. An initial study indicated that 403,000 people became ill and 69 people died, according to the Water Quality and Health Council, making it the largest waterborne outbreak in the United States history. Most people recovered on their own. Of the people who died, the majority had compromised immune systems. So just what that really means is they were already sick from something else, and this really helped put the nail in the coffin. 2009, the H1N1 flu, we've already discussed that. Globally, 80% of this outbreak's deaths were estimated to have occurred in people younger than 65. 2010, 2014, we had the whooping cough. During the first outbreak, 10 infants died, and it was, whooping cough was one of those things that really only affected infants more than anything else, but it was highly contagious and was one of the most reoccurring diseases in the United States. And these coughing attacks would last for months on end and would be very life-threatening. And then we have 2020, COVID-19. SARS-CoV-2 virus, a type of coronavirus that causes the disease of COVID-19, was first detected in Wuhan City, China, in 2019. It seems to spread easily and sustainably, even in the communities. Now, we're going to pretty much stop right there for a second, and I'm going to start wrapping this up by saying that everything I've told you so far are still things that could reoccur within this country, giving the right environment. Without proper hygienic materials that are out there, proper medication, safety precautions, clean areas around your home or around your city, properly decontaminating things, cooking your food well, making sure that either boil your water, apply chlorine tablets, or you filter that water through very good filtration systems. Any one of these things can come back and can ravage a community of survivors that are already ravaged. During this time, this post-apocalyptic time, the most common things that people are probably going to see are going to be things like heat casualties, people who are overheated, underhydrated, and that'll weaken and compromise the immune system. You'll also have people that more than likely will have some sort of an intestinal disease because of uncooked or unprepared food. And the transmission of pathogens will probably be more likely then, once again, because people are going to be, more than likely pushed into smaller and smaller areas. So be mindful of that. You need to have proper distance amongst individuals and families. You need to have designated triage areas. You need to have designated quarantine areas within your city, your town, your compound, your survival community. You need to have proper PPE, which is personal protective equipment, like what we've seen with the mask and the gloves and the medical aprons, or you know, some sort of a plastic see-through visor. For the crews of medical staff who would be working around a quarantined area or around a triaged area of people who are unfortunately who have already caught some sort of infectious disease or who are passing away and dying of it. This is one of those things that will greatly affect the community in various different ways, because anyone in the community can be affected by it, from the strongest to the weakest, from the luckiest to the unluckiest. And, you know, you need to also have a proper hold upon the sanity of the people. People will start to lose faith in their government or their reestablished form of government when people start to die, that's their loved ones. It will drive people mad. You know, if the world's already coming to an end to, you know, some people, you know, we're going to have people who are going to be dealing with, you know, various stages of depression and psychosis, probably trying to find some sort of a way out through alcoholism or through some sort of a narcotic use. People may go into a sporadic violence. You know, you never really know what that trigger event for people is, but I can tell you this much. Post-apocalyptic, you have a lot of variants out there that can really destroy that survival community. But a lot of this can be prevented by preparing now. You can visit all different types of preparation companies. I strongly suggest that you properly stock up on medical supplies and have various books to learn these medical supplies, because you may not have a doctor or a nurse around you to tell you that this is this disease or this is how you properly suture a cut. I'm Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next week.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.